When the whites move to the suburbs, isn't that just a simple act? There's a dark side. The dark side is that the centers of the city disintegrate. And when we say, when we have entertainment in the house every night, when we have television with Jack Carson and all that in the house every night, this is just a simple thing, isn't it? It has a dark side. A very strong dark side. And why don't we ever talk about that one? Well, when Johnson decides to slip in the raises and troop levels without public debate, it looks like a simple act, perfectly reasonable under the circumstances. But it has a dark side. Decision to send 18-year-olds to whorehouses has a dark side. And the coolness with which McNamara and Bundy and Dean Rust discuss strategic things has a dark side. Have you ever noticed that? How cool the language is, how calm they always are. These are rationalists who don't want to get into feeling at all. And there's a great dark side to that calm rationality, which the Vietnam War made very clear. Well, did you notice how boyish McNamara looked last night? I was shocked. Probably it's because he's a boy. What is a boy? A boy is someone who takes an act and doesn't think of the dark side of it. An adult is a person who takes an act and is aware of the dark side. What is it like when we describe all our wars as we fight them for liberty, but other people fight them for tyranny? This has a little dark side, such a statement. McNamara made it again and again, without even being aware of it, apparently. So, the Europeans actually tried and studied the dark side of the political acts. And Conrad is a marvelous writer in that point. So, we have to realize that, I'm going to say something that's very depressing to me, that in the way our people are picking up European language about strategy, but they're repeating them as boys, in a way, there's a deep boyishness in all of our leaders. And even though they're using the same language of strategic goals, strategy, rights of interest as the Europeans do, doesn't work. So I think we have to add that possibility. We have to be very careful in using that language, because our whole tradition has been denying the dark side. And we're not really adults. So when the Vietnam War began, as people know, there were only two or three people in the United States who knew anything about Vietnamese society. Do you think that deterred people? Not a bit. It's horrifying to realize we invaded and decided to take over an entire nation when we didn't even know the language, or hadn't even two or three scholars could inform us on it. That is not adult behavior. And I don't think it's changing much at all. Reagan is another boy, an aged boy. Someone said the most wonderful job for the dead? Embalming, wonderful job. How to embalm a boy. So he always smiles forever. Doesn't see any dark side to anything he does. Everything he does is, he loves everyone. These men, so cheerful and so rational, are among the most dangerous men on earth. Because this problem of the dark side is not something we're going to get away from easily. So, well, I'm going to read now a poem, part of a poem that I wrote called The Teeth Mother Naked at Last. And I don't want to read this poem. When people ask me to read it in the last 8 years, I say, no, I'm not going to read it. I don't like it anymore. I don't want to read it. But since part of the thing we're doing now is trying to dip into this water, which is very dark water, I'll read this for you. This is the way it felt. Those who thought, they know how it thought. This is the way it felt. To someone. Just a human. The teeth mother naked at last. I'll read you about 4 pages of this. Massive ensigns lift beautifully from the deck. Wings appear over the trees, wings with 800 rivets. Engines burning 1,000 gallons of gasoline a minute sweep over the huts with dirt floors. The chickens feel the new fear deep in the pits of their beaks. Meanwhile, out in the China Sea, immense gray bodies are floating. Born in Roanoke, the ocean to both sides expanding, buoyed under dense marine. Helicopters flutter overhead. The death bee is coming. Super sabers like knots of neurotic energy sweep around in return. This is Hamilton's triumph. This is the advantage of a centralized bank. B-52s come from Guam. All the teachers die in flames. The hopes of Tolstoy fall asleep in the anteap. Do not ask for mercy. Now the time comes to look into the past tunnels, into the hours given and taken in school, the scuffles in coat rooms, foam leaps from his nostrils. Now we come to the scum you take from the mouths of the dead. Now we sit beside the dying and we hold their hands. There is hardly time for goodbye. The sergeant from North Carolina is dying. You hold his hand. He knows the mansions of the dead are empty. He has an empty place inside him, created one night when his parents came home drunk, and he uses half his skin to cover it, as you try to protect a balloon from sharp edges. Artillery shells explode. Napalm canisters roll end over end. 800 steel pellets fly through the vegetable walls. The six-hour-old infant puts his fists instinctively to his eyes to keep out the light. But the room explodes. The children explode. Blood leaps under vegetable walls. Yes, I know. Blood leaps under vegetable walls. Don't cry at that. Do you cry at the wind pouring out of Canada? Do you cry at the reeds shaken at the edges of the sloughs? The Marine Battalion enters. Ah, this happens when the seasons change. This happens when leaves begin to drop from the trees too early. Kill them! I don't want to see anything moving. This happens when the ice begins to show its teeth in the ponds. This happens when the heavy layers of lake water press down on the fish's head and sends him deeper, where his tail swirls slowly and his brain passes him pictures of heavy weeds, of vegetation fallen on vegetation. Hamilton saw all of this in detail. Every banana tree slashed, every cooking utensil smashed, every mattress cut. And now the marine knives sweep around like sharp-edged jets. How beautifully they slash open the rice bags and the mattresses. Ducks are killed with $150 shotguns. Old women watch the soldiers. Second part. Excellent Roman knives slip along the ribs. A stronger man such a jerk up the strips of flesh. Let's hear it again. You believe in the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost? A long scream unrolls. More. From the political point of view, democratic institutions are being built in Vietnam. Wouldn't you agree? A green parrot shudders under the fingertips. Blood jumps in the pocket. The scream lashes like a long tail. Let us not be deterred from our task by the voices of dissent. The whines of the jets pierce like a long needle. And as soon as the president finishes his press conference, black wings carry off the words, bits of flesh still clinging to them. The ministers lie, the professors lie, the television lies, the priests lie. These lies mean that the country wants to die. Lie after lie starts out into the prairie grass like an enormous caravan of Conestoga wagons. And a long desire for death flows out, guiding the enormous caravans from beneath, stringing together the vague and foolish words. It's a desire to take death inside, to feel it burning inside, pushing out velvety hairs like a clothes brush in the intestines. This is a thrill that leads the president on to lie. Now the chief executive enters and the press conference begins. First, the president lies about the date the Appalachian Mountains rose. And then he lies about the population of Chicago. And then he lies about the weight of the adult eagle. And then he lies about the acreage of the Everglades. He lies about the number of fish taken every year in the Arctic. He has private information about which city is the capital of Wyoming. He lies about the birthplace of Attila the Hun. He lies about the composition of the amniotic fluid. And he insists that Luther was never a German and that only the Protestants sold indulgences. That Pope Leo X wanted to reform the church, but the liberal elements prevented him. He says that the Peasants' War was fomented by Catholics from the North. You want me to stop this? You feel depressed? Good. I'm serious about these next lines now. These lies mean that we have a longing to die that we don't recognize. No nation tells lies. No older men betray their younger men in the way that it happened in the Vietnam War unless there's something deeply disturbed way down inside. It's a longing for someone to come and take you by the hand to where they all are sleeping. Do not be angry at the president. He is longing to take in his hand the locks of death hair to meet his own children, dead or unborn. He is drifting sideways toward the dusty places. Third section. This is what it's like for a rich country to make war. This is what it's like to bomb huts, afterwards described as structures. Remember that phrase? This is what it's like to kill marginal farmers, afterwards described as communists. This is what it's like to watch the altimeter needle going mad. Baron 25, this is 81. Are there any friendlies in the area? 81 from 25, negative on the friendlies. I'd like you to take out as many structures as possible located in those trees within 200 meters east and west of my smoke mark. I think I'll skip a little here. We know what happens. This is what it's like to have a gross national product. This is what it's like to send firebombs down from air-conditioned cockpits. This is what it's like to be told to fire into a reed hut with an automatic weapon. It's because we have so few women sobbing in back rooms. It's because we have so few children's heads torn apart by high-velocity bullets. It's because we have so few tears falling on our own hands. This is why the super saber turns and screams down toward the earth. I know that books are tired of us. I know they are chaining the Bible to chairs. Books don't want to remain in the same room with us anymore. Why are they dying? I have written this so many times. They are dying because the president has opened the Bible again. They are dying because gold deposits have been found among the Shoshone Indians. They are dying because money follows intellect, and intellect is like a fan opening in the wind. One more small piece, which I hate this section. But if one of those children came near that we have set on fire, came towards you like a gray barn walking, you would howl like a wind tunnel in a hurricane. You would tear at your shirt with blue hands. You would drive over your own child's wagon trying to back up. The pupils of your eyes would go wild. If a child came by burning, you would dance on a lawn. You would try to leap into the air, tearing at your cheeks. You would ram your head against the wall of your bedroom like a bull penned too long in his moody pen. If one of those children came towards me with both hands in the air, fire rising along both elbows, I would suddenly go back to my animal brain. I would drop on all fours, screaming. My vocal cords would turn blue, so would yours. It would be 2 days before I could play with my own children again. I'll end that and say a few words here. I read that poem not because I wanted to, but because If we are going to be healed, we're going to have to go back into that. The Germans didn't heal very well after the Second World War. And they get Günter Grass. Well, if I think if we're going to be healed, two things are essential. One thing is mourning. In some way, the American people hired Carter and Reagan because they knew they'd never mention the Vietnam War. But that isn't the way things go. When someone dies, it's important to mourn. More and more people tell me, oh, I didn't mourn at my father's funeral and I've been ill because of not mourning. If we had a real president like Lincoln, you know what Lincoln would do? Lincoln understood mourning. He would call a national day of mourning and would say, we're going to mourn for Vietnam today now. Everybody get up now. Don't go to work today. Stay home. We're going to think about the number of men who died. We're going to think about the loss to the country economically. We're going to think about the loss to the country in resources. That was mentioned so beautifully in the second lecture this morning. And we're going to think about the rupture of faith between young and old men, and then we're going to start weeping. And Lincoln would say, I'll begin. Do that a half an hour. And then you start to weep. Because mourning involves weeping. So I really think it's important that. And I think it's important not to be cool. When you hear people speak to you about the strategic reasons for the war, you'll notice how cool their voices are. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is that you'll probably be cool too. And Mr. Rossow speaks tonight in a rational way. What worries me is that you'll be cool. There's a time for politeness and then there's a time for weeping, and we have to know which is which. Am I saying anything to you? Time is for politeness is over in that area. Doesn't mean shouting. It means asking people who talk about Vietnam to have a little grief in their voices, to stop defending themselves for every decision they made and have a little grief in their voices. Second thing I think is important is that I think it's important that the older men apologize to the younger ones. I think Mr. Kennard should apologize, and I think he does and did. I felt it, something there. I think the Bundys should apologize. McNamara should apologize. I heard that McNamara has trouble sleeping, but he doesn't say it publicly. It's important that the young men not be considered crazy, that the old men looking over the wars apologize to them, and it'll make them feel less crazy, and it'll help bring the old and the younger men together. Well, so I would say weeping in the service of human union is no vice. I'm going to read you one poem now. And I don't feel the way I felt at the time of that war now. And I'll read you one poem, which is more like the way I feel now. A wonderful thing about getting older is that you're able to stay in grief more. You're not obligated to be cheerful all the time. And I feel grief to be very healing. So I'm going to do you a small poem in about 10 lines on grief. Thank you. is sorrow for? It is a storehouse full of barley, corn, wheat, and tears. One steps to the door on a round stone. And the storehouse feeds all the birds of sorrow. And I say to myself, will you have sorrow at last? Go on, be cheerful in autumn, be tranquil, calm, be stoic, yes, or in the valley of sorrows, spread your wings. I'm going to read that once more. Robert Frost always used to say that. I'll read it again. Now listen this time, will you? What is sorrow for? It is a storehouse of wheat, barley, corn, and tears. One steps to the door on a round stone. And the storehouse feeds all the birds of sorrow. And I say to myself, will you have sorrow at last? Go on, be tranquil in autumn, be cheerful, be stoic, yes, or in the valley of sorrows, spread your wings. Thank you. The eyeglass fell out here on me. Did you find it? Thank you so much. I've had them for 15 years. I could get some new ones. Wouldn't hurt.
My name is Susan Cockrell. I'm from Temple, and I'm a woman.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I can't get too worried about your disappearance of male values.
Yes.
I don't think it's radical to suggest that that is how we got into the nightmare of Vietnam, and that's the reason we didn't get out when we should have.
I didn't suggest that.
No, I don't think it's radical for me to suggest that is the reason.
Yes.
Lyndon Johnson said that the bully on your doorstep now will be raping your wife in your own bed tomorrow, the ultimate insult to a man.
I don't like that remark either.
Well,
at all.
He also characterized the war as a bitch.
And
talked about the war on poverty as being the woman he really loved.
I heard that one too.
Recognizing only two kinds of women.
Right.
Right. Okay, I just want to tell you that not to worry though, because your traditional male values are alive and well.
15, I hope so. Thank
15
you.
15 miles to the north in Temple, Texas, 10-year-old boys are told to beat hell out of each other every Saturday morning in football. So don't
this
worry.
Is your misunderstanding the term traditional male values. Completely. Traditional male values are not connected with machoism. For example, I'll give you an example. In the Hopi tribes, for example, the young male is taken away from the mother at the age of 12. And he goes into the kiva. The men have built a kiva. And the kiva is only entered by men. It goes down into the ground and is entered from the top. This is to teach boys that men are not restricted to the sky and women to the earth, as we think in our culture. On the contrary, men have a very strong earth quality, women have a sky quality. So they enter from the sky, and then the young boy lives with the males then for a year and a half. He doesn't see his mother for a year and a half. During that time, the males teach him what males love. What do males love in this world and the next world? They teach him the songs, the old stories that carry male values, not macho values, soul values. And they make the boy understand that to be a male has many other characteristics, including the transcendent, the whole interest in immortality, the interest in struggle and will and discipline, as well as the religious power of the male in his own stories. This is what is not being done in this country. The older males are not teaching that to their sons. And I'm not accusing them at all. I'm just saying that is what has happened. It's as if the society taught it 100 years ago, and we didn't notice that the society stopped teaching it. I know that. I have two sons. And when my daughters were coming along, I felt that intuitively this would go well. And it went relatively well. When my sons came along and were 12 to 13, I suddenly realized I had to make up my mind what I wished to teach them. And one had to do it consciously. Does that help at all? Yes, I agree with Lyndon Johnson. I had a totally macho view, and that whole rapist thing is crazy. And I was touched by the grief in his face last night. That was very touching to me, and I know he had that side. And that those shots, Dick, those shots you had from the side there, that was marvelous to hold on to that all that time. Oh, it was so wonderful. So we're all complicated. We're all idiots. Yes. Who has it?
First of all, on behalf of at least my share of the feminine gender in the audience, thank you for a very moving experience. And secondly, in contrast to what was said earlier, I feel that possibly you have identified something in a different way that we have been calling feminine liberation for 20 years, and possibly it's been male erosion that we're talking about. And I appreciate you giving us that share of the
thank you
viewpoint.
Very much. Yes. Why don't you speak up? Give her the microphone. She disagrees.
I sure do.
Okay, tell us.
I think you can all hear me.
No, you need the microphone. Take the microphone.
Well, I think someone's here.
That's all right. We'll come back. We have a few minutes.
Well, I disagree with you wholeheartedly on men not teaching their sons. I think they do.
Okay.
I do. Okay. And I just want you to know.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I think Mr.
You want to let me go first, or do you want me to?
Where are we? I think he is next. I believe so.
It would be very wrong if we did not have on this program someone like Mr. Bly to capture the raw revolt at the ugliness of this war as it was deeply felt, and by many, including above all people like President Johnson and Secretary Rusk. I said that it would have been quite wrong not to have on the program someone like Mr. Bly, who evoked so powerfully and directly the revolt of sensitive human beings at war, and this particular war, and a strand that was as deeply felt by President Johnson and Mr. Rusk as it was by Mr. Bly. There are only two points, and I would I'm an expert, really, having been a target for many years on various views against the policy in Southeast Asia of the United States in the 60s and early 70s. And I dealt with the students and others always with a sense of respect and understanding why they took the positions they did. Most of our talks went at least 3 hours, and most 5 or 6, and I shall not talk that long.
This discussion continues on code 5B-48-82.